Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are just as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They're milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
On May 1st, 2010, Shanann Gilbert disappeared along the south shore of Long Island under mysterious circumstances.
Earlier that same night, she had called 911 alleging that somebody was trying to kill her, but in spite of this call, the police had no idea where she was and who she had been referring to.
It wasn't until December of that year that the police had made a startling discovery. Four female bodies wrapped in burlap in the general area where Shanann had disappeared.
The search for Shanann intensified, and within months, police found her remains, as well as those of 16 people in the surrounding area, all of a similar profile.
Who was behind these murders, and how had they eluded capture? Was this all the work of a single person?
Today, these questions remain, along with another that lingers over the entire case.
Will we ever find the Long Island serial killer?
Search goes on in San Francisco for the man known as the Zodiac Killer.
In New York, the search continues for the .44 caliber killer.
See if you can explain to me why I would want to be a Scientologist.
Betches Media presents...
Tell me we have a lead.
Stone cold no.
It was literally like the Hunger Games.
Not another true crime podcast.
What can I say? Tough titties.
It's all fun and games until someone gets hurt.
Welcome back to Not Another True Crime Podcast. I'm Sarah Levine.
And I'm Danny Murphy. And we're your partners in crime, wine, and time, because we're going to be in your ear for the next hour talking about a case that we all are probably familiar with.
We are. And I think we did so many episodes that took place in Jersey. It was only time to bring it home.
Yeah, I was airing out my Jersey issues to the world. But now we're going to Long Island.
We are going to Long Island. I feel like I should do this in a Long Island accent. We are talking about the Long Island serial killer. No, that was kind of Boston.
It was very Ilaria Baldwin, if you will.
Well, I actually am from Long Island, because why would you pretend to be from there?
That'd be a whole different case to be evaluated by. No, but I'm wearing, because it's Long Island, so I also am kind of dressed like the Long Island medium, just because I don't know if I got this cardigan from Chico's, but I wouldn't be surprised if I did.
So today we are going to be talking about the Long Island serial killer. This one is, I mean, it's really interesting. There's a lot going on and a lot of corruption and
so much
intrigue. So let's just get into it. The story all starts with the disappearance of Shanann Gilbert. She was a 24-year-old escort from New Jersey. Shouts out to Jersey.
Jersey?
Well, the interesting thing is, too, about this case is that even though it's the Long Island serial killer and all of these people were found on Long Island, they are not actually from Long Island.
Yeah. Well, we learned from the Night Stalker that people just throw names to the wall and hope one sticks.
Yeah, I know.
They're just
the
like
East Area Rapist, the original Night Stalker, the Diamond Knot Killer, like some crazy shit like that.
It's just a bunch of boy band test names. It's like X Factor.
Right. I mean, this one actually does make sense because
true. That does make a little more sense.
Yes. He's killing people either on Long Island and then transporting them to Long Island anyway. So, okay. Shanann Gilbert, she disappeared on May 1st, 2010. During a job, and it was taking place in a gated community on the south shore of Long Island. She had actually made a 911 call that night saying someone was trying to kill her, and like nothing happened really. Her family tried to report her missing, and the police wouldn't treat her as a missing person. Probably because she was 24 years old, and also because she was a sex worker, because we're going to circle back to this, but the attitudes from the police were bad.
Yeah, the police and also a lot of the public too. It's just infuriating.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get into that. And then on May 3rd, her mother received a call from a man asking if her daughter was there or if she was still missing. So
Well, it's kind of weird that, like, who is this man? Like, how did the, like, why was the man just calling her for that? It's kind of like being like, why is she checking if he's turning up?
Yeah, it's like, what do you know? Mysterious.
And it was also on my birthday, so it had to be included, May 3rd.
So then this all took a turn because while the police were searching for Gilbert in December 2010, which is still like, what, 6 months later, 7 months later?
Yeah.
Four bodies were found wrapped in burlap on Oak Beach, Long Island. So this led the Suffolk County Police Commissioner Richard Dormer to say four bodies found in the same location pretty much speaks for itself. It's more than a coincidence. We could have a serial killer. And then on top of that, autopsies revealed that all the victims had died of strangulation. And at the time, police just believed that a car drove along the highway and just like dumped them into the bushes at various intervals. The interesting thing was that Shanann was not among the bodies found, but this string of discoveries led the police to widen their search. And within a few months, they found 16 victims' bodies discovered in the surrounding areas of this highway, all of them women with similar profiles. And right now, we know that there could be anywhere between 10 to 17 victims that are specifically connected with who is called the Long Island serial killer, or they also call it, I think, Gilgo Beach killer.
Yeah.
And the first known victim was all the way back in 1996 when a pair of legs washed up near Davis Park on Fire Island. So we're talking about a long time.
Yeah, a Long Island long time. Yeah.
A Long Island long time. That sounds like a drink or like someone's stripper name.
You know what a Long Island long time is? It's any person listening to this right now who's been on Long Island since March 13th, 2020. Whatever you're drinking, that's what it's called now.
Yeah, no, I couldn't do that. So shouts out to you.
Shout out to you.
If you're still there. And then eventually Shanann Gilbert's remains were found in December 2011, which is like, again, a year and a half after she went missing.
Literally.
So long. And she was found in a marsh in Oak Beach that hadn't been searched previously. And this is like the weird part, too, because some investigators think that she ran away and got trapped in the marsh and like succumbed to the elements. And like, I'm not a law enforcement agent, but I don't think so.
This isn't Greek mythology. You know what I mean? Like, how does that actually correlate to like reality?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there were some differences between her case and the other victims. Like the other victims were dealing with someone who was covering their tracks, like who used burner phones to make appointments and things like that. Gilbert's client was like open and used his own cell phone and stuff like that. Who knows? An autopsy done by the family did find that her cause of death was also consistent with strangulation, but the police believe that her death was an accident and not related to the Long Island serial killer. But either way, her disappearance did lead to this massive discovery. And it's, I don't know. I mean, I kind of feel like she is involved.
I think without a doubt. And I think it's the only, like she led to the discovery, but also it's because of so much bias and things like that we'll get into later. It's why it took so long for her to be found and why maybe certain evidence could be messed up with it and everything like that too.
Yeah, totally.
Did you, before we get into, because of course we are going to talk about the other victims, but did you watch Lost Girls on Netflix? Because that was mainly about Shanann and her mom type of thing. It's not a documentary, anybody.
But I didn't have time. And also Billy Jensen, who I think did a lot of the research for I'll Be Gone in the Dark, like posthumously for Michelle McNamara, ooh, just came out with a podcast about this case.
I think
the podcast came out like earlier this week.
Oh, we like Billy Jensen, so shout out to him. Okay.
Yeah.
I like that. I was going to say we should have him on, but he'd probably be like, listen to my podcast, and I respect that, Billy.
Yeah. He'd be like, you guys don't know what the fuck you're talking about, but I do.
That's why we need him. We'll have him come on for like a different one. He also has a great jawline, which
and
is
we'd
just
be insane. Like, you're right.
Yeah. I would just stare at his jawline being like, go on. So that's just Billy, if you're listening to this, if someone wants to tell Billy that we love him, please do. So anyway, and also I liked Lost Girls, watch it on Netflix if you have
is
the
it
time.
Still on?
Yeah, I believe, because it just came out last year and it's a Netflix original.
Oh, hell yeah.
So it'll be on
because
for
I got
bit.
Burned by betting on Zero and I was like, oh, this is on Netflix. So yeah, then no, I had to rent it on YouTube.
It should still, yeah, it's still on. It premiered at Sundance. And I thought it kind of told the story in a well way, a lot of focus just on Shanann now, not so much on the case itself. Take it or leave it type of thing. But
okay.
Yeah. It was good. I enjoyed it. And I kind of always like to, because I feel like so many times with cases, we watch documentaries, it was fun to kind of, or more so interesting to watch dramatization in Laid in Truth with it more so, which was fascinating. Mm. So, like we said, though, it was more than just Shanann. There were a lot of victims and believed to be around 10 to 17, all connected to the Long Island serial killer. A few of them, like we talked about, still remain unidentified, but there seems to be a very clear pattern between all of the victims. Most were petite 20-somethings who worked as escorts advertising on Craigslist, which back in like 2010, that was like the main, I feel like, because like there weren't apps for...
What did they call it? Not the adult pages, but you know what I'm talking about.
Seeking Connections, right?
Yes, but I feel like there was Seeking Connections, but there was also like a... like an adult section of Craigslist.
There was, because you had to say you were over 18 to get on it. And I like, yeah. But yeah, because I know like now, like if anyone isn't familiar with this case, like hearing now you're like, oh my God, Craigslist, what? But like there were no like apps to meet up or like have a business like yourself then, because.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just thinking about the types of like Law and Order SVU episodes that would have been filmed during this time. And I'm imagining just like the websites that they would have to like, for escort pages during this time period were just like essentially MySpace level of like skill.
Oh yeah.
It was not like a high level operation.
Yeah. There was no swiping or like connecting your Spotify playlist to anything.
Yeah.
And then also especially too, cause Craigslist, you can remain for the most part anonymous and just.
Yeah. Well, that's the scary part. Cause I mean, I didn't use Craigslist in 2010, but like nowadays it's pretty much all throwaway emails.
Yeah, it's very much a scam.
So it's just like, how do you track people?
Yeah, but I feel like, I mean, I'm just basing an assumption here. The perk of, it was mainly the only place to advertise for escort work, I'm assuming, and then, or in a more precise way. And also B, it was nice to probably keep your anonymity, because take how people look at sex work now, take it back 10 years, they looked at it worse then. And it's just, which is a completely different story, which is I think people should respect it more, but here we are. So they worked as escorts advertising on this site, and they were not native to New York, so they would kind of just go into New York for their job with their client.
I feel like what's interesting about that is they do think that the killer does live on Long Island and might be native to Long Island. And it's kind of this like almost power imbalance where you're dealing with sex workers who are not like familiar with the area, or at least not native to it. And they're just not in their home element.
That is really true. Yeah. Cause it's like, not like, it's like if you're in your hometown, you could be like, okay, I can run this block. And then I know I'm in like a public street or something like that. It's just, you have no clue where you are and you're just trapped with this person.
Scary.
It's terrifying. And the first victim that we're going to talk about is Valerie Mack. She was a 24-year-old mother from South Jersey who was missing 20 years before her body was discovered.
That is like the craziest part, is a lot of these women were missing for many years before
such
they were found.
A long time, and just had no answers for so long.
Their families.
So she was actually identified through her aunt's DNA with genealogy testing. And she primarily, because she was in South Jersey, worked for the most part in Philadelphia, in Philly, just because closer distance, nearby city.
Mm-hmm. I feel like I actually, when I first got on Hinge a couple years ago, I didn't realize I had my radius was automatically set to 100 miles, so I ended up matching with, and actually like I dated him for a couple of weeks, this guy who lived in Jersey but like South Jersey, to the point that he would go out in Philly more often than he would go out in Manhattan, and I was like, this is never gonna work.
I was gonna say, on the flip side, I kind of love that for you.
Thank you. I mean, yeah, it didn't work out, but
Because let me tell you, whenever I'm in Philly, there's some fine people there, A. And B, I feel like there's like a nice, it's the city of brotherly love, isn't it?
That's what they say, but I can neither confirm nor deny.
Right? So anyone from Philly has a brother and they want me to love them. I just applied some Glossier lipstick for no reason. And by lipstick, I mean lip balm, because my lips are chapped.
Danny is ready for you.
I know the Jersey Turnpike well. So she worked mostly in...
And the dance move too.
I mean, I just did like one yoga class this week. I think I'm flexible enough for that. I'm like, I hope they're getting their medical degree at Drexel so they could help me go to the ER after I break my bone doing the Jersey jump bike.
Oh, yes.
So back to Valerie. She had a young son and was living with her boyfriend near Port Republic, New Jersey. She was left without parents at a young age, moved around a lot, and was in the foster system. So really just kind of didn't have a like stable situation growing up and really just jumped around trying to make the best case for her, build a life.
Yeah, I think a lot of these victims that we're going to see were just very vulnerable people doing sex work because they really needed money. A lot of them were mothers, some single mothers. So it was just like, I mean, it's just really awful.
It's hard. It's, yeah, it's people that are extremely vulnerable and in need of help getting the complete opposite of that. She was dismembered and her remains were found scattered in the woods of Manorville, Long Island, and off Ocean Parkway. So I'm sure that also added to the struggle of trying to find her, just because that, of course, makes any identification harder, but they were able to do that with her aunt's DNA. The second victim were discussing is Amber Lynn Costello, who was 27, but was also a sex worker who grew up in North Carolina, but was living in Babylon, which is in Long Island. She struggled
on Long Island.
Okay. The best bagels are not on Long Island. So we'll go with that.
No, I mean, I feel like Long Island bagels are good. I don't think they're any different than like New York City bagels, but another time I dated this guy from Hinge and he tried to tell me that New Jersey bagels were the best.
Oh yeah, marry him.
Ew, no.
Lock him down.
No, that's like a serial killer trait.
No, the best, our bagels are the best is because we have just like definitely like gasoline in our water. And it, I think it like inflates, it makes it a little chewy or something like that. It's great.
Guys, DM us at NATC Pod and tell us if New York or Jersey has the better bagels. I mean, I could put it to a poll, but I think the rest of the followers are going to be like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, I can't wait for someone in like Idaho to be like, okay, fuck you.
yeah, sorry. Bagels aside.
Bagels aside, yes. She, Amber, kind of what we were saying, these victims were struggling and had, were trying to make the best for themselves, but she struggled a lot with her life with drugs, primarily heroin. And her sister was actually the one who got her into sex work, and they traveled up and down the East Coast doing it. So they were sort of kind of like each other, like traveled with each other. Probably, I'm assuming it helped with protection for them and just having someone to do it with. You know what I mean? Like just going up and down the East Coast alone would be very lonely. So doing it with your sister. Amber started off using an escort agency, but then switched to Craigslist. And I think I remember this happens because the agency, of course, gets a cut. And as you can assume, if they're not cutting it in favor of the workers.
That's so sad. It. Yeah, because like if you're struggling to make ends meet, you're going to try to maximize
your profit.
It's sad that it ends up with people like putting themselves in situations that make them more vulnerable because they're just working for themselves.
That's the thing, because I'm sure, well, these agencies, I'm assuming, aren't 100% vetting all their people. I'm sure there's a better system for it, or at least...
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, I'm sure these agencies are not, like, the best, but I would imagine it's... I mean, you'd think it's better than just straight up going off Craigslist, but I don't know what they're like.
At least you would have someone to call, you know what I mean? Like, a person to call being like, this client is freaking me out type of thing.
That's true.
And also, there'd be a paper trail of who was the last person seen with this woman, too.
Right, but I'm sure they're predatory in their own way, so.
Oh, without
it's
a...
really difficult.
Without a doubt. There's no winning, yeah, for this. Well, except now when there's a better apps that you can, and individual-wise, to filter people out. But when Amber went missing, her sister didn't even file a missing persons report. She just sort of assumed that she met someone she was getting high with.
Ugh, that's got to suck.
It does suck. It's a hard thing because I'm sure... Like you never like I'm like it's like your sister and I'm like she's probably I don't know if she actually assumed that but still it's like file a missing like you're traveling with your sister like file a missing person report.
Yes, but then there's the thing where if you are a sex worker, you're not going to want to
file the
like
report.
Talk to the police because what you're doing is illegal, and you don't want to end up in prison or jail.
Yeah, they'd end up being like, okay, well, your sister does drugs and you both are sex workers, you're arrested, and it's like. That's okay.
Yeah, I feel like she didn't want that either. So that's rough.
Well, that's the hard thing. And that's exactly what Sarah said, how these are such vulnerable victims, because there's no way for them to win in a lot of these situations. Because what do you do? What do you, when you're trapped in the corner like this?
Yeah.
Which is just awful. She ended up receiving a call from someone offering her $1,500 for her services on September 2nd of 2010. So this is a few months after Shanann, the first victim, or the first victim we discussed. And after she left for it, she was never seen again.
Some of the other victims, one is Maureen Brainerd Barnes. She was a 25-year-old mother of two who vanished during a visit to New York from her home in Norwich, Connecticut. She was missing for 3 years before she was eventually found as one of the Gilgo Four, which is the name that they give, that they kind of like ascribe to the four original victims that were found. Her sister doesn't know how she ended up on Long Island, but she did take clients from Craigslist, but she would do it from a Super 8 in Manhattan. So it's unclear like how she got out there and why.
And also just for anybody who might not know, that's like a motel chain.
Yes. Yes. The motel chain. And her sister says that she turned to sex work because she was a single mom and she was desperate for money, which is kind of like what happened to a lot of the other women.
Yeah.
There's also Megan Waterman, who was 22 years old, and she was the youngest of the four. She was last seen on June 6th, 2010, leaving a Hop Hog Holiday Inn. Danny, I took this one because I did not think you'd know how to pronounce Hop Hog. I got you.
I was going to say, what's going on there?
Guys, it is spelled H-A-U-P-A-G-U-E. So
I would
only
have said
true
Hop-Hog.
Long Islanders know.
What going on? Yeah, I don't know. I do not compute.
Another victim, Melissa Barthelemy, was one of the first discovered, and she was from the Bronx. The weirdest part, like this one took a very sinister turn because the killer called Melissa's 16-year-old sister multiple times from Melissa's phone to taunt her.
That's just like...
So this is how we know we're dealing with a serial killer and just generally depraved person.
A depraved, twisted, awful person to be like, oh, here's a younger sister in her phone.
Yeah.
Let me ruin her life more than I already just did. Let me just add in like salt to the wounds.
Completely fucked up. And there was also Jessica Taylor, who was an escort and was last seen at Port Authority in Manhattan. And she was dismembered and just honestly, like her remains were kind of scattered. Some found in Gilgo Beach in 2011. Some also discovered earlier in 2003 in Manorville, New York, which is in Long Island, but almost 50 miles from all the other remains that were found. So, yeah, I mean, this is a very, I don't know, like twisted MO.
It's just such like a twist, depraved thing. And it just, every time you hear it, you understand, like you see how also in a sense, they got away with it for so long because they targeted people that they knew couldn't go to the police or didn't have the, it's not like a very wealthy family from Connecticut who can like send in all these top lawyers and private investigators and things like that.
Yeah. And also I just think like they didn't have the same roots that someone who is working like, I don't know, a 9-to-5 and living with their husband would have. Like,
yeah. On Long Island
just
too.
Like different. Yeah. Like different support systems, just like everything. Also, most of the victims we think were female, but there was also found and linked to the Long Island serial killer an unidentified Asian male, also a female toddler, and a woman who is identified as Peaches because of her tattoo, and Peaches is believed to be the mother of the child. And there's also a number of other people who are suspected to be linked, but they just haven't been officially linked yet.
It's because it's like it's been so much time and there's just so much that.
Yeah.
It's all over the place. And on top of it being all over the place in some time, of course, there are other reasons why some things can't be linked and why this can't be solved. And it is sort of a motif in a lot of the cases we talk about. A little corruption and a little.
Good old fashioned police corruption.
Police corruption with a dash of slut shaming and a side of misogyny just whipped up in
a shittiness cocktail
on Long Island. Yeah, you're Long Island, long time.
Honestly, listen, I do not claim these people. That is South Shore.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm a North Shore bitch through and through.
And we like that. Okay.
And we do not claim Suffolk County, Nassau. I mean, Nassau County is not no dream, but we didn't do this.
We do. Feel like I'm innocent.
And sometimes that's all I can say.
Yeah, that's what I say when I'm like, no, I'm not from the Jersey Shore area of Jersey.
Or when you're like, no, Westfield is the town that we hate.
Oh, literally. Do not say I'm from Westfield. We have no, actually, we have some crazy stories in Cranford, but we had no, we have, John List wasn't there. So there's that.
And neither was the Westfield Watcher.
Oh my God, not at all. I'm going to have nightmares again remembering that story. So talking about the corruption, the Suffolk County PD locked out the FBI in 2012.
These dicks.
Even though they came only to assist them in 2011. So that's like less than a year of them trying. And then they suddenly were getting shut out. And I'm going to go out on a limb here and say, you're never shutting out the FBI for a good reason. You know what I mean? You're never like, oh, we really got, who could help us? The FBI. Nah. We don't want them to cramp our style. It's like, no, you don't want them to uncover stuff. Like, what's going on here? I'm just saying.
Yeah. Not to spoil it, but it's like you're hiding something.
Yeah. Not to spoil it, but just to let you know, they sent away everybody before they could complete a profile on them. So they really had nothing.
Yeah. They even had the behavioral analysis unit, which if you watch Criminal Minds, like that's what it is, who could have like looked at all the case file and blah, 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 and like constructed a profile of the killer and maybe pointed them in a direction of like what type of suspect they're looking for. But no, they sent them away before they could complete the profile. So that's like a big factor.
That kind of scratches your head. You're like, okay. So yeah, it just seemed loud and clear while they never went out and said it from their actions and behavior, they really did not care or care to invest time in these victims. One senior detective remarked that it was a consolation to the public that the victims were, and I quote him, only sex workers, which...
But he didn't call them sex workers. That's what I did, because that is the correct term, I hope, that we use in 2021. Yes.
If it's not, please correct us and we apologize. But yeah, I believe it is. And that's exactly...
He used a more outdated word.
A more outdated term for a fucking outdated mindset. And I hope he doesn't have a pen. Like, I don't even, like, it's just so annoying too that, and like, even the fact that he said that, it just really goes to show they didn't even try for a second with this case. You know what I mean? It speaks volumes and it speaks everything. Even if they were doing the bare minimum of checking out places, they weren't stalking to find a lead. They weren't working overtime, or they weren't actually putting the full potential that they could / should be doing for their job, by the way, on this.
Gross. Gross, gross, gross.
Disgusting. And also the newly appointed chief, James Burke, who was being investigated by the Justice Department for corruption.
Excellent.
Fun little, just a fun little cherry on top of him. It is funny because whenever someone brings up Burke to this, I'm like, John Benet. And yeah, I'm like,
the brother did it.
I'm like,
and you're like, wait, no, what?
No, a different Burke. In 2012, he assaulted a man being held for a parole violation. Very chill. You want someone level-headed for a police chief, I'm sure. The man in question was brought in on suspicion that he stole a bag containing sex toys and porn from Burke's police car.
Why was that there? Like, what?
I don't care what you do in the boudoir or in your backseat, but then don't care about what anybody else does. You know what I mean? And it's like, the fact that it was like sex toys too infuriates me so much more, because I'm like, all right, what's going on here?
Yeah, like, why? I'm just like, why? Yeah, I don't know. Why do you have sex toys and porn in your, like, work car, dude? Like, what's going on?
It's also, I'm like, are your nipples getting twisted? Like, when the car turns, I'm like, maybe that'll be there. I don't think you can drive with that. And I'm assuming a James Burke is a little, like, got a little hairy chest. So I feel like that could hurt, but I mean, whatever. Burke ended up pressuring detectives who saw the attack to deny it had happened. Great, just, you know, have the police lie for one another. Of course, guys, because like we said, the Suffolk County is just really cream de la crop here. So of course, the district attorney, Thomas J. Spada, did help cover it up.
Yeah.
Truly. Excellent. So the two were later convicted of this conspiracy, they don't have any DNA, or that was just decided, and they don't have any DNA from a suspect or potential suspect for these cases. We're getting back to the serial killer cases now, but they do have DNA from the victims. And it just sort of like I don't get why they're kind of just like, I feel like they, for this case, they were looking for things to be dead ends. Do you know what I mean? Instead of like actually using them as a stepping off point. New York has a very strict law about police accessing DNA. But it's just kind of one of those situations where you kind of just want them to, quite frankly, do their job.
Yeah, like do your job and also don't actively be corrupt. Like, oh my God.
Hot take.
I know, really hot take.
It's a hot take this week. Just be a good person to the DA of Suffolk County and Morgan Wallen, and neither of them can. So here we
go. Well, it's just like on one level, you have these police officers who like actively did not give a fuck about the victims, and that's bad enough. And that also is very bad. But then on the other hand, you have people who are like actively working to do the wrong stuff and like, and then try to cover it up. So it's like, it's yeah. just a double whammy of like this police force was not going to solve this case for a multitude of reasons.
They weren't going to solve it. And while Sarah, I think we are educated, I don't think we will solve it either, but there are some leads of who it could be.
I have some theories, but I don't think that we will personally solve it. But I will say that when I listened to Martinis and Murder, their episode on the Golden State Killer, I just remember this so clearly because John Thrasher had this theory and that he thought it was a police officer for various reasons. And lo and behold, it was a police officer. So while I don't think that we'll solve it, I think that we could maybe predict it.
Okay, there you go. And you and John can go out for celebratory martinis, or we all need to.
We're all going. Yeah. So as far as who it can be, there's some evidence. Police recently released a leather belt with hand engraved initials, which are either HM or WH, depending on literally like if it's upside down or right side up. So they recently released that to the public. And they also think, as we mentioned, that it is someone who knows Long Island just because the remains were found more than 40 miles apart, which suggests knowledge of the area. There is one theory that it could be related to a string of murders of escorts in Atlantic City when four sex workers were found dead in a ditch in 2006 behind the Golden Key Motel. Some similarities there. I mean, it's not officially linked, but they are exploring that possibility.
Yeah, because it could even be then part of like maybe even like a bigger string of things.
Yes. There also could be two killers. Basically, like the four victims who were found in 2010, the Gilgo Four, and then like another serial killer who's killing people, because I think the Gilgo Four were found dismembered and the other group was not. So that could suggest like a different person, but I don't know, maybe not. And then there are two like potential, I don't know if they're people of interest, but there are two names that came up. So one is a man named John Bitrolf, who was, get this, convicted of killing two sex workers in the early 1990s. No, and no. Their bodies were discovered in lewd positions with their left shoe missing. He was convicted and his DNA was found on one of the victims. His wife, of course, doesn't think that he did it. Like, all right.
Yeah, it's like, okay, lady, let's call a spade here.
Yeah. And so for all of you people who are like, wait, but he was convicted of these murders in the 1990s and this is happening in the 2000s. Here's the thing. He wasn't arrested until 2014 when, for the second time in this case, the family genealogy DNA came through and his brother's DNA ended up tying him to these unsolved murders. So this guy was just walking around free for decades and we already know he has this...
His MO.
Yeah, we already know his MO. We already know he's killed sex workers. So, like...
I feel like there could be something there. I don't know why he wouldn't... I mean, I guess if he confesses to it, he'd get a lot more, but, like, come on.
Yeah, I mean, so I think that's a legit suspect. Another suspect is Burke. Not Ramsey. The chief. He was investigated by the Internal Affairs Bureau in the 90s for his associations with sex workers. So
there we go. And isn't it weird that under his lead, the FBI was shut out. Everything was shut out. Nothing was going on to help this case.
Yeah. And we already know he's a dirtbag. So
yeah, that is, yeah.
I don't know there. I'm sure there's like other, there's so many other potential people and names, but these were the two big ones that came up. Danny, do you have any theories?
Yeah, I kind of do. While I do think Burke is a say it with me piece of shit, I do sort of like the John Bittrell, like he kind of is more in my head with it, just because we have proof of him doing something like this before, and he was free for a while, and I can't imagine the idea of just killing. It's the set with why serial killers are serial killers. It's like I can't imagine him killing two sex workers and then being like, okay, I'm done. I'll just live my normal life now.
I don't know. I mean, I think even if it's not Burke, I immediately got the vibes that it was a police officer just because I don't know why. Like the knowledge of the area, like being able to sort of try at least to elude law enforcement. I mean, like multiple, like, you know, getting rid of the evidence along like multiple stretches of highway.
That's because it is a lot of like intense, like specific Long Island geography.
Yeah.
Knowledge that comes from people that have like maps and routinely scan for stuff.
Yeah. So, and a vehicle. So that's my personal theory. I think it is probably a police officer. Also just the choice of the victim too, is just like, again, like we said, like most vulnerable people who, like, the police weren't protecting, even though they're supposed to.
Well, that's what I was going to say. They had the opportunity to form, that's true, they have the opportunity to form their own narrative with it, too, that they were just like, well, you know, they're only, you know, boom, 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 to kind of get the public to just calm down and be like, thank God my daughter's a cheerleader or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, fortunately, there is more renewed interest in the case and people are like, no, we care about this and we care about these people. And you can't just like sideline these poor women and perhaps a few men.
I'm glad people are getting more momentum. And also now that people, of course, are being like, it's not okay that you can't just write off looking for people because of what they do for a living.
Yeah. It's also not a consolation that there's a serial killer just, you know, running around on Long Island.
Right. Like, do you want that to be your rep of police officers? Like, what the fuck?
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I'm just too hopeful about all these cases. But this one, to me, it's like there is the possibility for some evidence. And I don't think it's like cold.
It's not cold. It's warm. There's some warmth added to it, which is good. They're preheating this oven, which, thank God.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if there was a lead in this at some point.
I know. I would. Yeah, I could see that. I'm hopeful. And I feel like it just, if you said too, like there's some new people coming in that might be like, let me actually take a look at this. Or like,
yeah, and like turn up the heat.
You call the FBI, like, sorry, we ghosted you. Like, can you actually help us?
FBI is like, new phone, who this?
No, FBI, if you're listening to this, I mean, you're probably listening to me on my laptop, so I'm looking at you. Help them out.
Yeah, right. No, the NSA people, whoever is in my phone right now, you know, just shoot over a message to the FBI. Tell them, you know, we're sorry. We don't know them.
We don't know them, but we apologize for them and we still want your help. So there is that.
Totally. And before we play today's game, we have a little update from my favorite. Actually, I don't think it's my favorite pyramids game, but somebody's favorite pyramids game, LuLaRoe. Oof. That's right. It's the leggings one. And they have been in a lawsuit for quite some time. It was filed in Washington State. And basically now the headline is LuLaRoe agrees to pay $4.7 million in pyramids game lawsuit. Like I said, filed in the state of Washington, and about 2 weeks before it was supposed to go to trial, LuLaRoe ended up settling with the plaintiffs. $4 million of that settlement are going to be used to pay Washington state residents who lost money because of LuLaRoe's deceptive practices and people who failed to make a full-time income as they were promised, which is going to amount to about 3,000 residents getting a check, so not bad. Somebody else do the math. 4 million divided by 3,000.
I was going to say they're getting their own stimulus check, I guess. So there's that.
They're getting a stimulus check. Yeah. Mark Stidham, who is like one of the founders of LuLaRoe and just like general scumbag, said in a press release that even though they would have won the case, it would have been too expensive to fight. To which I say, big fat eye roll.
It's truly like the end of Scooby-Doo when they're like, and I would have gotten away with it too if it wasn't for you kids. And it's like,
oh my God, true.
Like, you went enough. You went enough.
Babe. I was going to say, it's like when you turn down a guy and he's like, oh, fuck you, bitch. You're ugly. I didn't like you anyway. And you're like, okay, you DM'd me, man.
You're like, you tried to sell me leggings, sir.
Yeah. And also, like we've seen in a lot of pyramid scheme lawsuits, even though LuLaRoe did settle, they didn't admit liability or wrongdoing. So, you know, there's that. They do, though, have to adhere to certain new guidelines in order to continue to operate in Washington in the future. So, number one, they have to ensure people understand how much money they can actually make through LuLaRoe. And they're going to do this by publishing an income disclosure statement that accurately details the earning potential. Number two, they're also only going to be able to pay bonuses to retailers based on that person's individual sales and not the sales of their downline. That's a big one.
That's an intense buddy. Yeah.
That's a big one. Also, their refund policy was a big part of the lawsuit because there was a lot of drama. Like the big draw of LuLaRoe, because their onboarding was so expensive, it was like $5,000 a package. But they would hook people by saying like, well, any unsolved merch help you guys.
You are spiraling. This is how you know it's a 5 p.m. recording day.
It's true. Okay. So basically their refund policy would say that anything you didn't sell, you could refund like 100%, get all your money back. So this was why a lot of people would join. But then when it came time to like, so then when it came to time to cash in, they would like make all these excuses and be like, oh, actually, this isn't eligible because it's an old pattern or whatever, just making up shit. And there was also a point in which they changed the refund policy, and it was like this huge scramble for people to try to get their money. And they like sent in all their inventory, and LuLaRoe was like, no, sorry. And we're also not going to send it back. So people were just like, out all this money they spent, and then they were also out the product. So it was a big shit show.
Big old shit show.
Big shit show. But because of this lawsuit, now, at least in Washington, it's going to be regulating their refund policy. So new retailers have to be able to refund within 45 days of joining, and it bans the companies from making any deductions on the refund request, being like, oh no, this is like an old collection, like you can't refund it. So they can't do that shit anymore. So they got some rules.
Something tells me won't change much.
I mean, I think it will definitely help if like people aren't like, the fact that they can't earn bonuses based on their downline is a big like a big pyramid scheme. Like that's just big pyramid scheme shit, and them taking that away, I think, is a big deal.
That is true.
I think a lot of people are going to just like jump ship to a different pyramid scheme.
Hey, you know what? Cause once you're in it, you can't leave it.
Yeah. At least I feel like the people who are high enough up to be making a good percentage of money off their downline.
There we go. Okay. Yeah. And now before we let you go, it's time for my favorite part of the episode now. And from the DMs and the reviews, y'all's favorite too. We're bringing in Jorge, fan favorite, the voice of an angel, people are saying.
Wow.
That's amazing.
You are a very comforting voice after ours.
Now I feel so self-conscious about my voice. Like, how do I speak?
I mean, just like that. I mean, it's people are putting it on their toast right now like butter.
All right. So for today's game, in honor of an island that is long, we are playing the long game.
Ooh. Oh, that's fun.
Which is all about the longest blanks in history. And all of them are going to be crime related. And we're going to play this like Price is Right rules. So it's going to be, I'm going to say something, and then you guys are going to have to guess the number that is associated with the question.
Ooh. Damn, is it multiple choice? That sounds hard.
No, it's open-ended, but it's just okay. The closest to the actual number will win the question. So
all I got to say is you said we're guessing the longest things in history. Sarah said it sounds hard. You said it's open-ended. I don't know what this episode's rated now. I don't know what's going on, but I'm ready. I'm ready for this.
All right, let's jump right in. So the first question is, how long was the longest trial in U.S. history? So we are looking for a number of years.
Ooh. I wonder whose it would have been.
I'm going to go with 4 years.
Hmm.
Danny says 4.
I was going to say 2.
Sarah says 2. And the correct answer was 7 years.
Ugh, what was it?
It was
don't you
trial...
have the right to a speedy trial? It's nuts.
It was a trial called the McMartin Preschool Trial. Have you guys heard of this?
No.
No.
So this is insane. So this happened from 1983 to 1990.
Oh my God.
And it's kind of known as part of the satanic preschool, like
satanic panic
craze.
What?
So
that was a thing.
It all happened when one mother of a kid in this preschool in Florida accused a teacher of abusing her child, and a panic took over the entire preschool. 7 teachers were accused, but there was literally 0 convictions from this entire 7-year trial.
Wow.
It all ended up being fabricated. The investigators were basically coaxing children to make unfounded accusations, and parents were accused of coaching their children. So it's bizarre. And
that's so bad.
Some of the accusations were actually insane. Like, one of the teachers was accused of being able to fly.
I'm sorry?
And another one, and this is crazy, but it's real. This was said in U.S. court, was that the teachers were flushing kids down the toilet to secret rooms where satanic rituals and orgies would take place.
Okay, that one seems easily disprovable.
Like, look at, like, how big is the
pipes? And we call the plumber to the stand. Like, how big are the pipes? Case closed.
I like, wow. Well, now I want to do an episode on that.
Yeah, it's crazy. And also, the main defendant was this guy called Ray Buckley, and he spent this entire time in jail without bail.
Oh, he
spent 7 years.
That also
in jail.
Feels like a constitutional. Rights violation.
Yeah, the 80s were
I bet crazy. He got a big payout. That's
I was gonna say, it also sounds like Florida.
No, he countersued the parents for slander, and he won the case, but it was only awarded $1.
I'm sorry?
In damages. $1.
That's some Taylor Swift shit right there. What?
Justice for what's his name? Because he deserves way more money, at least like the lost earnings from spending 7 years in prison.
I know. Yeah. And, you know, there's many interviews with him saying this ruined my life. You know,
no shit.
It's hard to recover from that. Yeah. If you're the guy known as the guy who was keeping kids.
Sue again.
Yeah,
come to me.
Sewage system for not backing him up.
Oh, my God.
All right. Moving right along. We have the longest amount of time that a person was missing and then found alive. So actually found.
Oh,
I'm going like 43 years.
I was going to say 19 years. That's the number in my head, and I'm going with it.
The correct answer was 42 years.
What the fuck?
Shut the fuck up. Oh,
it's true.
Wow. Okay.
Good job,
okay.
Daddy.
I'm feeling hot. Okay. I'm getting it a little bit.
Yeah, you're doing great.
Damn.
So this was the story of a woman called Flora Stevens, who actually worked as a chambermaid at a hotel, making $2.25 an hour. This was in 1975.
And fun fact, that's still the minimum wage today.
Fucking truly.
So her husband actually dropped her off at a hospital. And 2 hours later, when he came to pick her back up, she was nowhere to be found and just gone without a trace. And it wasn't till 2017 when a skeleton was found in the area that matched her general description. And it obviously wasn't her, but it sort of ignited more like interest in the case again. And they found that someone named Flora Harris was using Flora Stevens's social security number at an assisted living facility in Massachusetts. So they went and tried to investigate this woman, and she was suffering from dementia. So it was very hard to communicate with her. But they showed her a picture of Flora Stevens, and she said, "Me." She actually recognized herself.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And, they talked to the workers at the facility, and apparently she never really spoke too much about her past, other than to say that she had had a bad marriage and that her husband was abusive.
Ooh.
Oh, shit.
So it sort of led people to believe that she actually ran away and eventually was found 42 years later. In 2017.
Wow.
Wow. Oh my God. Well, that kind of has I'm glad that she was able to run away from that, I guess. Damn, that's
me too. Wow.
Yeah.
And then who was the body? Do they know her?
I don't think they found out. It's just a random.
Didn't make the article.
She's like, oh, and she killed her husband. Got it.
All right, Danny has two. Sarah has zero. But Sarah, anyone's game at this point. All right, next up, we have the longest prison sentence ever given.
Well, Sarah just kind of researched this.
And this is not including life sentences. This is just like a raw number of years.
So it doesn't count like consecutive life sentences?
Yeah, I'm not counting those. This is just like a number of years that was given to one person.
Okay.
265.
Now I feel like I have to go up. But I was going to say 181 years, and I don't know why.
Okay.
So I'm just going to go with that.
The correct answer was 141,078 years.
Wait. Wait, how?
I thought Laura was supposed to be good at math. What the fuck?
What country was this?
This was actually a case in Thailand.
Okay.
From a woman. Wait, I don't even know how to pronounce this name, but I'm going to give it a shot. Chamoy Tibiaso, apparently.
I'll believe it.
Shout out to the icon.
And she was convicted of committing corporate fraud for running a pyramid scheme that defrauded more than 16,000 people and was worth over $200 million.
Holy shit. So don't do LuLaRoe in Thailand.
Yeah, fuck. I was gonna say,
pretty much the rest of eternity. In
oh my God.
What's funny about this, though, is that at the time, this was in the 80s, Thai law said that those convicted of corporate fraud couldn't serve more than 20 years in prison. So she was actually released after just 8 years of her 141,078-year sentence.
I love that. Like, the prison workers are like, so should we get rid of this body? It's like, no. It says 141,000 years.
She run, like, it's her ghost just like, can I fucking go? Yeah. She's like, I'm honoring you, bitches.
The ghost bailiff is like, all right, you're free.
Yeah. Now she just has, like, such a bar conversation story. Because that's the thing, too. It was a crime, but it's not like I was expecting her to kill someone. She's like, yeah, I fucking sold some leggings in a sense, and I was sentenced to kill for 1,000 years.
It's amazing.
All right, Danny has won three of them, but hey, Sarah, we can still play for bragging points. There's two more.
Oh, wow. Okay, great.
Okay, so what about the longest imprisonment term ever served, like actually served?
I'm going to go with 91 years.
I'm going to do 102.
Okay, so the correct answer was 70 years, 303 days. So Sarah, you're on the board.
You're on the board, baby.
Not a shutout. All right.
So this honor goes to a person called Charles Fassard, who was a French immigrant living in Australia, and he was convicted of murdering an old man in his home and stealing his boots. So
there are Yeezys, you know.
No regrets.
It's also so funny hearing all this intense stuff happening in other countries. I'm like, in America, they just be like, oh, I stole your shoes. Yeah.
So he was jailed, or he was imprisoned when he was 21 years old, and he died when he was 92, and he was still incarcerated. And he served his term at a prison called J Ward, which was a psychiatric facility to house the criminally insane, but is now has been turned into a museum providing tours. So if you're in Victoria,
road trip,
check it out.
Well, they can go everywhere now. COVID's from what I see on social media, Australia's good to go. They're partying.
Okay. Damn it.
Hit it up.
All right, last question.
Okay.
What was the longest police car chase? And this is, I'm looking for distance in miles.
I mean, my mind is thinking, like, how long was that OJ car chase?
That's where my mind was going, too.
Yes, twins.
But I don't know numbers.
I'm going to just say 500 miles. Wait, I'm thinking of the song. Whatever, I'll just take my
I know, because now I'm like, how many? I'm like, I'm a fucking idiot. I'm like, how many miles are in the country?
Yeah, I don't know.
420 miles? Yeah, 420. That was accidental.
So the correct answer was 447 miles. So I think, Danny, you're technically closer.
Damn it.
Oh, yeah. Damn.
By 27.
How am I? Like, this show's dumb luck work, guys.
Oh, yeah.
So this happened in New Zealand, and the driver was a 20-year-old Michael Massey, who was a sawmill worker in Invercargill, New Zealand. The chase started on October 14th in 2016 at 1 a.m. when police attempted to pull him over for speeding, and he just proceeded to evade the police for the next 16 hours.
Wait, okay, didn't he have to like stop and refuel?
I don't know how this happened, but he was caught at 5 p.m. the next day when he abandoned his car and went off on foot and they finally caught up to him.
That's iconic.
That is wow.
Yeah. And he had actually been disqualified from driving a full year before this incident. So that might explain why he was so keen.
But he's clearly a good driver.
Yeah. I was like, two things. His name, A, sounds like a Disney character, like a Disney actor. For a second, I was like, is this the guy from
That's So Raven?
Yeah, I was like, is this That's So Raven? Yeah, because Massey, but it's kind of Massey. Yeah. And the second one, for just a speeding ticket, the cops, like, why did they, like, I guess.
Why did they waste the resources? Do they have that little crime in New Zealand? Damn.
I guess, yeah.
I guess so, yeah. It's a different society.
They're like, we had one COVID case and one person who stole gum, so we really need this speeding
ticket. We got to get this monster.
Well, that is our game. And Danny, you are the winner of the long game. 2 weeks in a row. Look at you.
Wow.
Yeah, killing it.
I really did not think I had that in me.
Love it. I know about pyramid schemes and that's it.
Yeah, I know how to say numbers and that really helped me out there. I'm obsessed. And I'm also, I literally wrote a note because I'm Googling the Florida thing because I am now very invested in the satanic preschool.
Oh, yeah.
Look it up. It's the McMartin preschool trial. It's the Trove. Awesome. Yeah.
All right. I'm going to jump into that. Well, thank you so much, Jorge, for,
of
course, ending it out. Everyone, this is truly the perfect way, besides me and Sarah just going, bye. Because now we're ending. Now I'm high on life. I'm going to have a glass of wine to celebrate my victory. And it's that. So while I'm pouring wine, you guys can follow us on Instagram at NATCpod.
Yes, and be sure to follow Danny on Instagram at Cashmere Danny with a K.
Oh my God, follow Sarah Lameme. Jorge, do you want anyone to follow you or are you private? What's going on?
No, I don't really subscribe to social media. I'm more of a shut-in.
And on that note, so we'll be covering Jorge's future crime in a future day. And on trial, I'm going to be like, I don't know, he was like a shut-in.
We have it on tape.
But until that crime date or that court case, we'll see you guys next week.
Betches.